It's actually a special title. That is, it's not just a general thing like in English that we would consider someone who has started something. You know, like you have the founder of a company or founder of this or that. Because sometimes even our own devotees use the term a little loosely. They start something, you know, that's a little bit on its own. And then they'll claim to be founder. You know, because in English, yeah, they are, you know. But this term means something special. It's just that the problem is that in English, it doesn't quite mean much. It just means someone who started something, you know. So you could, you know, clear some land, build a house, and you're the founder of that, you know, homestead or something. You know, and no one would complain. In English, it means something. But in our line, then the founder is a special position. See, this is founder is to be distinguished from the head of the Sampradaya. Like you have the Sampradaya is first established with Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, with the four Kumaras, and with Lakshmi. No, is it four Kumaras? No, Shiva. Right? Yeah, okay. So then that's they are the head of the Sampradaya. But here, you can say they're the founder, but at the same time is, if you really want to be serious about that, then you have that Krishna's the founder, because he's the one that established the thing. And then he gave that to Brahma, to Shiva, to Lakshmi, and the Kumaras. So if you want to follow that logic, it keeps going back. Here, founder means a special thing that is specifically one only finds in the Kali Yuga. And it is specifically in connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is how we are using this term, founder acharya. Founder acharya. So it's different from the Sampradaya head. So here is that in the other three yugas, then people who are interested in spiritual life, they would go and look for someone to guide them, look for a teacher. Like we see, like Dhruva Maharaj, he goes out looking for the teacher. So, but we find that in this age, it's not so much that people are so interested to go out and look. Or if they do go out and look, then there's a whole, array of persons who have their own idea, you know, so they make up their own Sampradaya, they have their own philosophy. So one could easily get distracted. So then in this age, the need is to go out to the people because the people are distracted and they're very happy in their distraction. They're not sensitive enough to understand that things aren't going nicely, you know. That, you know, they're already on their seventh divorce, but they're very happy to go for the eighth marriage. They don't quite figure things out in the material world isn't really what it's supposed to be, you know, what it's played up to be, you know. So in this age, there's a necessity to go out to the people. So then, this then means then there must be you must establish for a particular time and place peoples something that'll work for all of them. Because besides the disqualification of the people in the age of being interested in spiritual life, there's also going to be a slowness in being established in spiritual life, right? So you can't leave it that then the next generation is going to change it. Previously, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's establishing the founder acharyas, then each spiritual master, you know, from one generation to next, would make whatever adjustments needed to be done to fit that particular time. And that was their authority. But in when you're dealing, and that's one person, you know, they may have many disciples, may not. Generally, someone would have a few only. Oh, we only hear of some personalities that have many this time, Durvasa Muni would travel 10,000, Vishishta 10,000 disciples. Narad Muni, of course, one can't count. The four Kumaras. But otherwise, then you don't hear of necessarily great expansive organizations. So then it will work. Someone's in some village, they will apply it there, things change, they apply, and it's in a more controlled situation. You can guarantee, you know, the control of who you're training. In the Kali Yuga, though, by going out and preaching, you bring in all kinds of persons who are interested. So the philosophy will, how you say? It will attract the interest of a wide variety of living entities, but not based on their material piety. So they don't necessarily have a great stock of material piety in this age by which just naturally they can follow the, you know, principles and culture of a spiritual path. That will take some time to establish. And in that, there are many, many deep-rooted misunderstandings, doubts, bad habits. And so, therefore, you can't have the system clouded by that. Therefore, there's the necessity in this age of a founder acharya. So the founder acharya then establishes what is going to work for the length of his mission. What is the angle on the philosophy? What is the particular emphasis in the presentation? Which parts are considered more important or primary? Which aspects are considered secondary? What will be the methods of ritual, of interaction, of the whole social culture? Where will its emphasis be? All these different things then need to be established, because the persons that are involved in it don't have the background to be able to understand that very easily. Right? If someone's grown up in a purely Vedic background, then he has the experiences of all the things that the acharya is going to speak about. And the acharya is then going to tell him, this is more important, this is less important. Okay, in your family, then you've been very, very careful to perform the Pancha Mahayagyas, you know, for the five debts that the householder owes to the demigods, to the sages, to mankind, to the living entities, and to the brahmanas. So, therefore, that's there. That's important. One has that debt. But, according to the Sampradaya, that's either performed in connection with the Lord, or as it is in its natural Vedic form, or as we do, simply by the performance of the Sankirtan mission, respecting devotees, distributing prasad, that we take care of those debts. So it's not a separate endeavor other than our sadhana. Our own process already takes care of it. It's not a separate ritual. So like that, the acharya then will establish these things. So if someone's grown up in it, they can understand, yes, okay, so then this goes into this place, this becomes more prominent, this becomes secondary, this aspect we don't even require like that, because we're not interested in karmakanda or jnanakanda or upasanakanda connected with the devas. So therefore these sections go out. So then everything is very easy. And then they understood the principles, they'll give that to the next generation. But in this age, it may take a long time. Someone may not understand these aspects of the culture. So despite that, the system has to work. So the founder acharya then, therefore, has to establish what is going to work at this time for these people, for what is their goal, where they're trying to get the people, right? Like generally we see other sampradayas, two of the sampradayas, then they're trying to get their people to Vaikuntha, you know, and Sarup Siddhi, the liberation. The same form as the Lord, but Sarup. Sarupya Mukti, yeah, okay. So then that is their goal, so therefore what it takes to get you to that, what culture you have to follow, what rituals, what practices to get you to that platform. Then we'll see the Nimbarkas or the Vallabhas like this, then they're trying to get into Goloka, but in different places. One is parental, they're both trying to get to Vrindavan, but in one is emphasizing on parental rasa, like the Vallabhas, Krishna is a child, you know, therefore their deities, Ladu Gopal, like this, and then everything they do is as a child, their deity, they get all kinds of little toys for him, they do all kinds of things like this. So that's there where they're trying to get. So their practices much match that. So since they're trying to get into Vrindavan, then a lot of the external ritual or formality is dropped, like in with the Shris and Madhvas, and it's much more, you know, pleasant, simple, because the parental ras is not very complex. It's very straightforward. So then very simply they can present. Nimbarkas, then they worship Radha and Krishna, but they worship Radha and Krishna always together. In other words, in sambhog, never separation like that. So in their line, Radha and Krishna are always in the kunjas, they're always having a good time together, all their associates, it's always very sweet and pleasant like that. But we see in our line, then there's a speciality that Radha and Krishna are separated, because then it makes their meeting even more deep. So every time they're separated, when they meet again, it becomes deeper. And when they're separated, that becomes deeper. So it's very dynamically deepening, right? It's not just always as pleasant. So then what is necessary to get to that platform, then the founder, Acharya, then establishes what practices you will do and this and that to get you to that platform of this Braja Bhakti. So then this then becomes the specialness of the founder Acharya, is that they are have been empowered by the Lord to establish all that. And so they establish all the principles and important details that will be followed for whatever their mission. It means the Ramanujas, the Madhvas, Nimbarka, they're still following, right? Nimbarka was 5,000 years ago. They're still following the same songs he wrote, written in the same ragas. Everything is the same. Their method of worship is the same. It hasn't changed. Like that. The Vallabhas, the others, the Shris, the Madhvas, they are exactly the same as the founder established it. Like that. And the present, senior persons, the leaders, the gurus, the preachers, they simply preach what the founder has already established. So there doesn't need to be a separate... One simply has to bring oneself in line with those teachings. That then establishes one in that particular line. You are a Madhvite because you preach what Madhva said. You follow what Madhva said. You get people to surrender to Madhva's teachings. You are a Sri Vaishnava if you get them to follow Ramanuja. Or a Nimbarka, because the same. So the same with us, is then Prabhupada as our founder Acharya. Then he has established how this mission works on an international scale, dealing with people who haven't come from a background that have any idea of what is Vaishnavism, what is Vedic culture, you know, what is human life, what is any of these things. So then he gives a system by which then anybody, by following, can be elevated to the platform of Braja Bhakti. So this is the then speciality of Srila Prabhupada as founder Acharya. So these founder Acharyas we see aren't just regular persons. They're not ordinary. And they didn't just establish it on their own. It's all based on Lord Chaitanya. Because in the other ages, you don't have them. So in this age, the avatar is golden. So this golden avatar, then he met all the Acharyas. This is explained in the Bhavishya Purana, and it is brought out in specific in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's work on the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, where the various Acharyas in their travels then came to Navadvip and met Lord Chaitanya. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to them his glories. And they all then naturally then wanted to preach his glories. But he said, no, you don't talk about me. And you also present this particular aspect of the Vaishnav Siddhanta. Therefore, then one was given Dwait, one Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, and one Dwaita Dwait. And then he said later, I will come and bring all these four together into a Chintaveda Aveda Tattva. So then that, then all the conclusions of the four sampradayas are found in this one sampradaya. And then within this, then Lord Chaitanya said, Nityananda Prabhu also then said that a great person would come, establish what would work for this mission. In other words, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then is established at this particular point. Because the Yuga Sandhyas, they are 500 years. That's the size of them. So then a Yuga Sandhya, after the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is when then is the beginning of the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the golden age, the 10,000 years that is talked about. So that begins after that Yuga Sandhya. So then we can see that that would establish Srila Prabhupada as that founder Acharya, who has been able to go to anywhere in the world, establish Krishna consciousness, establish a system that anyone anywhere could follow, and it works. So this is the speciality of the founder Acharya. That is their, what they have been chosen to do, what they're empowered to do. Like this. So it's not an arbitrary application of the word founder. And it's very specific. It's meant for how the mission works in the Kali Yuga. Because in the other ages it works differently, right? Four Kumaras walk around naked, so we don't follow that padati. Narad Muni flies around with his veena. Right, so means, but the founder establishes what's going to work for everybody, like this. So therefore, we have to distinguish between the founder, meaning the head of the sampradaya, like the sampradaya, head of Brahma and Shiva, Lakshmi, and the four Kumaras, and the application in the Kali Yuga of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's manifesting that overall mission in a specific formula as the founder Acharya. We have to be able to distinguish. This is by Madhvacharya, he calls this taratamya, which means with variety, the ability to distinguish variety within the spiritual platform. Right? The impersonalists, they don't understand this taratamya. So there's material world which has variety, but not very important. And the spiritual world, which has no variety. But for the Vaishnavas, then the real variety is in the spiritual world. And therefore, then we can say, though everything is spiritual and it's all non-different from Krishna, so therefore it's all the same in the way of it's non-different from Krishna. That's the oneness. But there is a difference. It's different from Krishna, and depending upon its particular position, it naturally brings out more or less of Krishna's attributes and his situation in which he can taste rasa. Therefore, the Vrindavan manifestation of the spiritual world contains more elements and deeper than the Vaikuntha rasa. Because Vaikuntha rasa is only addressing Krishna as God, not Krishna as the lover, Krishna as the friend, Krishna as the son. You don't see that till you get to Goloka. Then you start to see that. Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, you start to see these elements, though various balances are there, what is prominent. Then we get to because the moods are different. Like in Ramachandra has a wife, but the mood is maryada, or following the rules and regulations. So the dignity of the royal order, the dignity of varnashram, that whole flavor that is gained from knowing that you have performed your duty well and others appreciating that, and that interaction based on that kind of like that nobleness. So therefore the conjugal ras is not the prominent feature in the interactions. But we see in Braja, then, because it includes the most, it's the deepest, therefore we'll say the gopis are, of all the rasas, that's the best. And within there, then the gopis who are left-wing are the best. Of that, then Radharani is the best. So you can make this and then of Radharani's manifestations, then you have so many moods that she has until she gets to a particular aspect of Mahabhav that only she experiences. This Madanayaka Mahabhav. No one else experiences this. Only she. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to taste that. Because you've tasted that, it includes everything else. You don't have to separately get the taste of all the other, what it's like in Vaikuntha, what it's like here. That's already done. Like that. He can taste that as his expansions of Balaram. Balaram is expanding that. So he's both in the mood of servant and Lord. But Krishna is only in the mood of Lord, of enjoyer. There is no element of servant in him, because he's the source of everyone else. Though he, you know, he serves his devotees, but it's him as he's enjoying that service. Right? He, as not the servant, is taking that mood. But he wants to know what the servants are getting, because their happiness is greater than his. Therefore he takes the mood of Radharani, and Radharani in that mood of Madanayaka Bhava. So that brings that element, that's the uniqueness that is brought out then in the line. So then, so this then becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is bringing everything to this point. He is bringing them through his plan from following the Vedic culture badly to giving it up, to at least then they become good-mannered. Because to follow Varnashram, you have to have good manners, good qualities. Narad Muni explains in the seventh canto that there's 30 qualities to establish in a living entity to bring them to the human platform. Then a human being, you can teach Varnashram. So that's the first thing. First you make them human, then human to Varnashram. Then Varnashram you engage to dissolve our material attractions and attachments in this material world. That brings you to liberation. Then by the process of chanting the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, that will awaken within you the desire to serve Krishna in a particular relationship. That will take you beyond liberation into the spiritual pastimes. Within the spiritual pastimes, by associating with the advanced devotees, that will bring you to the platform of prema and beyond. So like this, then there is a natural development. So in the other, in the Vedic civilization, if someone is fortunate enough to understand what is the full picture, then they can endeavor for that. But if they don't, they will just see part of the picture. So they may try to become human, nice people, or they take up seriously Varnashram. In that Varnashram, they try for karma, or jnana, or yoga, or impersonalism, or they may come to the platform of Vaikuntha, like this. So, but in this age, you have to tell people, this is it. You can't wait for them to figure it out. In other ages, you teach them what they've understood. You give hints, but what they realize, that's what you teach them in. So in the Vedic literature, if a person doesn't have good qualities, you do not tell them about the transcendence. You teach them Varnashram, you teach them, you know, how to develop. But if they're proud, you don't teach them. Like that. Gautama Rishi's son had that problem. That he was very intelligent, a very great father, so he was also very intelligent, very qualified in that way to study. But he was proud of his studies. He had this Veda Garva. He was proud of what he knew. So then the difficulty came up is that his spiritual master then didn't teach him about transcendence. He learned vastly about the material branches of Vedic knowledge, the Vedas, the rituals, the logic, the histories, the Upavedas, and like this. He learned all this, Sanskrit, but he was not taught transcendence. So he graduated, and then he was traveling as a snataka. Snataka means a graduated brahmachari, a Brahmin brahmachari, who may travel and at some point settle down and establish his own school. So as a graduate, then he was traveling, And he went to the court. They generally go to like where the kings are having their big courts in this. And then the king was having discussions was discussing with the sages in that. Because you do a yajna has times. The morning and evening you perform yajnas. And then in the intervals during the day, that time they discuss philosophy. That's the way the kings would themselves advance, and that would be how then the people would get opportunity to hear spiritual subject matter. So they were discussing about the Vedas and this and that, and then the king, because of the sages who were there, the Brahmins who were there, then Gotama's son was the most knowledgeable. So the king then took advantage to inquire about transcendental subject matter. And he asked all kinds of questions, but Gotama's son didn't even know that such a topic existed. So he had gone through this school, he had graduated, so therefore he didn't think it existed. So he thinks the king is just trying to goof on him, like that. He is just asking these questions just to ask them, just because Kshatriyas sometimes become proud and they try to establish their superiority over the Brahmins. So he got very insulted and he left the court, went back to his father's ashram. His father said, "How was the assembly of sages?" He said, "It was terrible." He says, "Really? Why?" He says, "This king, he doesn't know how to behave. You know, badly behave." And then Gotama was shocked because he was known as such a great and elevated and pious king. So he asked him, "What happened?" Well, says, "We were discussing," and then he started to ask all these useless, irrelevant questions. They're not within the body of knowledge. So he asked him, "What were those questions?" So then Gotama's son told his father what all these questions were. By these questions, the father could understand not only is he have a good grasp on transcendence, but he's very deep in transcendence. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked such a deep technical questions. So then Gotama understood that this king knows more than even I know about transcendence. So then he took his son and the other sages that were there. They went out into the, as they were traveling to the kingdom, they picked up some firewood on the way and presented themselves before the king holding firewood, because that signifies that one is willing to render service. Firewood, the brahmachari collects firewood to maintain the sacrificial fires in the house of the teacher. So it's that one thing signifies the willingness to take up the duties of menial service towards the teacher. It means, "I will serve and you kindly give us knowledge." So then they came before the king with the firewood and said, we heard about these discussions and your questions. We want to become your disciples. serve you, learn from you." And the king then says, "You're a greatly elevated Brahmin. I'm just a Kshatriya. So therefore, I will teach you what I know, but you don't need to, the relationship is disciple, is not, you don't have to render service." So then they became his guests. They were given all facility. And then during the day, they would sit and discuss all these things. So we see it's that if pride is there, then it's not given transcendence. So this then becomes a very important aspect. What the qualification of the person, then it is revealed. So because of the pride in the Vedic literatures, the people were therefore thinking that they knew what they were talking about in the animal sacrifices. And therefore, the whole Vedic literature, one of the central principles is nonviolence. Because nonviolence is the moral stand. That's the sub-religious principle. That's the principle that helps us understand what is human life. But the application of this nonviolence then means that we are well-behaved towards every living entity. We are not violent towards them. We deal with them properly, like that. So neither are we physically violent, neither are we mentally, emotionally, verbally, in thoughts, violent. Because that violence then comes, its root is envy. which comes from our original envy of Krishna. When we become envious of Krishna, we become envious of everyone, including ourselves as soul. We're envious of our position as servant of Krishna. We want to be Krishna, so we're envious of that. Therefore, we commit violence to the soul by keeping ourselves and others away from recognizing this fact. So that violence then must be removed to get us back to the point of servant. Therefore, if someone is overly violent, and it's not according to scriptural application, they will also have a difficult time being servant. They will have a difficult time in understanding, I'm not the Lord, how I think it should be, should go. So therefore, that is such a central point. Therefore, of all the sins, the greatest sin you can do is killing of a Brahmin. Because that is the of violence, then violence to living entities. Of all of them, the Brahmin is the best, most important. And killing him means, you know, you can't be more violent to, you know, what violence you'll show to anyone else. And then this includes even character assassination of a Brahmin. That's also considered killing a Brahmin. It's the same result. It won't be as bad as physically killing them. But if the character is assassinated, then that will also, you'll get the same reaction. Maybe, you know, instead of hundreds of lifetimes being, you know, killed for that, it may be shorter. But in any case, it's considered within the realm of the Mahapaps, the five great sins. So we see is therefore of that, then the next is then what you ingest, because your consciousness is affected by what you eat, what you drink. So therefore, the meat eating, the intoxication, those things are then the next thing down. Then stealing, that it's yours. You know, we have to understand proprietorship must be given up. Therefore, so all these are within the realm of that, is that I am the controller, therefore I can do all these things. And then illicit sex, because then that is the epitome of trying to enjoy what you control. And then after that, bad association, that's the fifth sin. Is associating with those persons that do these other four, that's the fifth sin, because by that association, you'll take up those five habits, those four habits. So like this, then everything in the Vedic literature is categorized within these five sins. So you have your main sins, your Mahapaps, then you have your other different categories. So like this, there's like four or five categories of sin. But they all fall into these four areas. So then, you know, so therefore if you go and, you know, bother plants, rip up plants, break their branches, it's within the realm of violence. But it's on a lower level. You're being violent to plants, not to Brahmins. Like that. So like this, everything fits. So we see that this pride then can give rise to violence, because pride means you think you're special, and then if we're really special, we're God. Therefore, then the transcendental is not taught, because then you may become envious of God and his position, his devotees, everything like that. So it's just avoided in the Vedic literatures. But in this age, then the qualification is so bad that instead of starting from the bottom up, you start with the good qualities, this and that. You start from the top down. First you teach what's transcendental, who you are and all that transcendentally. Then if they can grasp that, take up the practices, then you can start to introduce the whole culture and social and economic ways in which they can live. Because previously you started with people who are already on that platform, then they went up from there. But here, we're not pious. So therefore, then the qualification to follow those systems isn't there. We gain that by the spiritual. So first you get the philosophy, then you get the pancharatric practices, then from the purification of those, then you can follow the Vedic. So then you have a complete social system. But you are already convinced that the goal is chanting Hare Krishna and developing love for Krishna. Then that way, then you won't get distracted by the lower processes. Because before, the lower processes were just normal life, and your attention was on the higher. But in this Kali Yuga, and occasional examples in other yugas, is the people get absorbed in the lower level because that is the bodily identification, the emotional or intellectual identification. So someone who's not very advanced can get easily distracted. So it takes someone who's actually advanced to follow these systems. So then in this age, it must be done the opposite way. Therefore, we see then because people were more pious before, Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimarkabala, they established already for people who are pious there, and then you move up from there. But in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, then we see it's done the other way. You know, the whole mission is geared for Jagai and Madhai. You can catch them, you can catch everybody. Right? So therefore, we can see is that this is the beginning of the golden age, so then we have the prestige of being in the category of the first to be picked up, first to be saved. So, and Lord Chaitanya starts with the most fallen. So therefore we have the prestige of being the most fallen. So therefore we were able to be, you know, caught up in the mission now. Later on, people will be much more pious, and that they'll already come with great, you know, piety and good behavior and all that, you know, from the third generation on. So they don't qualify to be saved first. So therefore, you know, we got the opportunity like this. So, but by then they can go deeper into, you know, the whole culture and everything that Srila Prabhupada's given. So this is the uniqueness of the founder Acharya and the uniqueness of founder Acharyas of, you know, specifically in the whole overall then of Srila Prabhupada's establishing this. So we must understand, we shouldn't get caught up in semantics here, of how we want to interpret founder Acharya. We have to take what is the meaning from the literatures like that. It's understood that the mission of the Lord is eternal. And everything is actually, Krishna says in the Gita, it's all, there's only one path, it's his path. And some of those on the path understand they're on the path, some of them don't understand they're on the path. They think that they're being pious and going to the heavenly planets or the Brahman or the yogis. But it's all part of the overall picture to bring people eventually back to Godhead. The Vaishnava paths are more direct. The other paths the other aspects of the path are indirect. The Vaishnava understanding is direct. And then within the Vaishnava understanding, then they're geared to go to specific realms within the spiritual planets. So then on the uniqueness of, then another step. Then the application of this is what the founder establishes that is good at all times, all places, all circumstances. Because they're empowered to understand that. So it's not that when Prabhupada is here, it could be followed. When he's not here, it can't be followed. It can be followed anywhere, anytime, during the length of his mission. So therefore, for 10,000 years, all this can be followed. After that, that's another thing. That's another discussion. But for 10,000 years, whatever the program Prabhupada established, the understanding, it will work. It's been empowered like that. Then it makes it very easy, because then those who come after, those who are the preachers and leaders of the mission after the founder Acharya, they don't have to work out what are the conclusions. They're already worked out. They don't have to work out what's the angle on the conclusions or the emphasis on the conclusions. It's already worked out. So simply they have to repeat, according to their understanding, these things, the teachings of the founder, to the other persons, whoever is their duty to be involved with. So in this way, then generation after generation, it will be handed down perfectly, because you're handing down what the founder has given. Therefore, the qualification of someone to lead in the mission after the founder is that sincerity to follow their instructions and to give that instructions. So that'll work. You don't have to worry. So this idea that they have to be a nitya siddha to, you know, tell me to chant Hare Krishna doesn't apply once you have the founder Acharya. If you don't have the founder Acharya, then it's better. But The bottom line is a pure devotee, like that. Pure devotee is means a madhyama. A madhyama bhakta is one who their purpose is not karma or jnana. Their purpose is to please Krishna, go back to Godhead, like that. If karma and jnana is their main focus, then it's not within the madhyama platform. So it's not their intent, right? Until you get to the liberated platform, then we're always going to be influenced by the conditioned nature. Though it may not be our intent. Just like you go into the kitchen to do something nice, you may drop something on the floor. You didn't go in the kitchen to, you know, drop, you know, the cauliflower on the floor. You went in there to deal with it. But due to inexperience, you dropped the cauliflower. Someone who's more experienced would have not done it. But it's not your intent. But like you get young kids, they go into the kitchen. That is their intent. They go in there, grab what they want. It falls around. They throw it at each other. And it's great fun. You know, for them, that is kitchen life, right? Right? But those who understand the actual purpose of the kitchen understand it's not for my enjoyment. It's actually for Krishna's enjoyment. Therefore, I follow standards in the kitchen. Like that. And then who's the master chef, then they know the most. So therefore, the others who are expert, they follow the direction of the master. So like that. So therefore, it works perfectly. That's the system. So then the mission of the founder, operated by madhyamas and by uttamas, then works very nicely. Operated by kanistas, it will be slow. It may, because they may miss points, they may misunderstand the balance, may misunderstand. So it becomes a difficulty. But, you know, just with time, that is overcome. I mean, the founder establishes at one point, you're not going to have the bulk of persons being neophytes in the, you know, forever. That's a phenomena when the founder first comes and establishes it. Then naturally those persons will mature. The next generations will get the benefit of that maturity. So from a younger age, then they're already much more advanced. Because of their maturity, their consciousness is better. They can attract higher quality of souls, you know, that are more advanced in the devotional line to take birth in the families of devotees. Like this, so it will develop. But they'll always, of course, be first generation. So then, that then makes the whole system work. So one has to be speaking what the founder is speaking. It has to be based on that. If it's not, you can't make up your own and claim that you are a guru within ISKCON. Or that those who came to ISKCON to surrender to the founder, that you have any right or authority over those persons. So if a guru decides to make up his own philosophy, he doesn't have the right to say, these are my disciples, they're going with me. Because no, they've surrendered to Prabhupada's mission, and then they surrendered to persons within the mission to help them understand that, to become rightly situated. So if they want to say, okay, I'm starting my own sampradaya, and anybody who would like to follow me can, then you're starting from a clean slate. If they want to switch, that's up to them. But they can't claim, because they're my disciples, they go with me. No, they're your Diksha disciples, but they're not your Siksha disciples. They're Prabhupada's Siksha disciples. And they've come to Prabhupada for that instruction. Therefore, the siksha in our line is more important than the diksha. So the siksha, the siksha guru is the prominent guru, like that. So all siksha in ISKCON means it must be following what Srila Prabhupada's given us. If it doesn't follow, then they have to start their own scene and invite whoever they like. But they can't claim that it's just automatic. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's just like you join the company, and as the representative, they give you a card, they give you a car, they give you an office, they give you, you know, all kinds of things, phones and gadgets and gizmos. And as long as you're representing the company, you can say they're all yours. If you leave the company, they stay with the company. It's nothing to do with you as an individual. It has something to do with you as a representative of the company. So this must be understood. That is also the strength of this system over the other system, because if the guru somehow goes off, they are his disciples. He is the leader of it. If they want to reject him, that's another thing. But he can claim. But when you have the founder, then it doesn't work like that. Everyone is the siksha disciple of the founder. And simultaneously, for them to cross their conditioned nature, then they must follow the Pancharatrik system of accepting a living guru to give you diksha, to initiate you into the mantras, into the worship, and into the, you know, the rituals of the Pancharatrik process and the Vedic process. So, therefore, we can see from all angles it's basically fail-safe, you know. It works quite well. So, or how you say, foolproof. So despite us, it can work, right? Like that. So then, within this, we see is that Lord Chaitanya has given the mission, Rupa Goswami has established everything, and we see then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then did some very important, established some very important points, some details that to make things work very nicely in the present scenario, the contemporary scenario. One of the major, well, two major aspects. One is the emphasis by the following of the Vaidhi sadhana. And the other is the splitting of the initiation, the pancha samskar, into two parts instead of all in one part. And of the establishment of the GBC. The GBC Governing Body Commission, this is the term of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada took that in the start because that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted. The Gaudiya Math for a short time, some say 2 years, some say 8 years, had a governing body commission. But because they felt that, well, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was here, it went so nicely, one person said, what happens? It works. So managerially is very easy, you know, no muss, no fuss. So therefore, and they found the bureaucracy of going, you know, working together with their god brothers and trying to come to consensus and all that to be too burdensome. Just one guy says jump and everybody else goes how high, and then it works nicely. So therefore, then it was pushed through by one of the senior Vaishnavas there, the senior most Vaishnava, that let's go back to the Acharya system, forget this GBC. And being senior most, they bought it. So therefore, we see, and from that, then instead of being one unified mission, it is broke, it splinters, and by the padati that they've taken, it must splinter. You cannot be an acharya unless you start your own temple. So you have to separate from the temple you were with before. So instead of a unified preaching, then you have, you know, now, you know, I'm not sure how many, but probably upwards of 100 different kinds of missions. And with time, there'll have to be thousands by the present system they're using. So then, therefore, we see the comment by Prabhupada saying that they've rendered the mission useless. I mean, as a preaching machine, it's become useless. But he doesn't say that what they speak, their philosophy or anything. That's not the problem. Problem is that the machinery that they're using for organizing is useless. You know, one little disturbance, immediately there's a new mat, right? While we see when there is a GBC, despite so much disturbance, it basically stays together. So that was what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur foresaw. Therefore, it has to work. The GBC is higher than the Acharya because the GBC is established by Rupa Goswami. Concept. It was called the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha. So it's a sabha of the senior most Vaishnavas of the Gaudiya Sampradaya that they would get together at regular intervals and discuss. They would come to the understanding and then make their plans for expanding the mission, and then everyone would follow that decision. So that was established by Rupa Goswami. Jiva Goswami then formalized it. And then we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then again reformalized it. And so then that then naturally becomes understood as now what we've done is Srila Prabhupada tried to establish that with the God brothers. It wasn't working. So then he established it on his own. But it must run with a GBC, not an Acharya. works with an acharya, then it's not what Rupa Goswami wanted as a mission. It's not what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established as a mission. It's not what Prabhupada established. So therefore, it's unbecoming of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas to use such a system. The GBC is the head, and everybody else must work under that. That is the method, because that is the method of Vrindavan. That is the Braja method. Vaikuntha, you have a head, right? There's a king in Mathura. There's a king in Dwarka. Krishna is the king in Vaikuntha. But in Vrindavan, then it's the devotees. The devotees are actually the head, because they are the ones that have Krishna in their control. In the other realms, basically, Krishna is more in control. But in Vrindavan, it's not. So the devotees are under control. So you go up to the top to Krishna by tattva, but he puts himself under the devotees. Means not in philosophy, but directly. You see him. He's serving, carrying Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head. Then, he's doing things. The elder gopis ask him to dance. He dances for them. You know, the gopis, he does whatever they want. His friends, they're on his shoulders, are wrestling with him. So we see is that it's a different mood. Therefore, everybody is under that system. That is the uniqueness of the Braja mood. So even though it's claimed ISKCON is Vaidhi, ISKCON is this, rules and regulations, big bureaucracy, but it is the Braja bureaucracy. Like it or not, if you want to manage anything, you want to even manage your bar of soap, then there needs to be some bureaucracy. There's going to be something. You want a bar of soap, you got to get in your car, go down to the shop, you got to pay cash, something. You have to pay, you have to get it, you have to unwrap it, you have to put it in its place, you manage where it's going to be. You know, someone can go, I mean, where's the freedom in this bathroom? Why can't I put the soap on the floor or leave it in the sink? Or why do I have to put it here? Why is this lady of the house such a, megalomaniac that I have to put it here, otherwise I'm uncultured? You know, so the point is that just organization means it's going, and the bigger it is, right? It means when the gopis roll on to Govindastali, Krishna's played the flute, they arrive there, they got 20 minutes to set up the rasa dance. So in that 20 minutes, then some of them are going to take Radharani to meet Krishna and arrange, and they have then those few minutes at Radharani's with Krishna where they're meeting. So that gives them probably like 5 minutes to arrange the kunj in which they're going to be. So that's going to take hundreds of gopis in 5 minutes to arrange it. And then the other, 5,000 are going to go over to where they're going to do the rasa dance, sweep the place, set it up, get out the instruments, make everything wonderful, have everything tuned. It's ready to go. That's management, And so therefore, we should never think Krishna consciousness means no management. That is an idea of the 60s. You have nice long hair, dirty, overalls, work boots, like that, a little nice pouch that has your favorite substances in, your mind expanding substances in. And in there, then there's nothing. It's all whatever you think. But in the real world and in the spiritual world, there's serious management. But there it's pleasant because no one says no, no one does anything wrong. So you tell them, do this, it happens. So therefore, it works nicely. But management is there. Lalita Shak, she's the boss. She's the general. She organizes it. Vrindadevi with her thousands of forest, devis, she organizes. You need paraphernalia? She's got godowns everywhere full of it. Like that, whatever they're going to do, she brings it out. That's management. Right? It means Yoga Maya, she manages the cosmic creation, not just the spiritual world. She manages the material world. It's Mahamaya. It's the same person. It's one person, just in two different hats. She manages the whole thing. You can't. She's a super manager. Like that. So therefore, it's management's not the problem. So therefore, the GBC as an administrative body or as the head of the society is not material. It's a spiritual principle given by Rupa Goswami, followed by the residents of Braja. So it's a very natural thing, like that. the bigger you are, then the more expansive it has to be, like that. So that's the principle. So it's not like sometimes thought that it's management, and so therefore GBC, they're Kshatriyas, and then therefore then they got to be controlled by Brahman. No, none of this nonsense. They're supposed to be the senior most leaders of the society. They may have managerial abilities, not, that's another thing. They must be most mature, most understood, most realized, most practical, like that. Then they can speak and come to a consensus. So that has been established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So that's the uniqueness. Right? But they themselves, as the Acharya, then they're doing like that. But this is how they wanted it. Prabhupada wanted to work with his God brothers. He wanted it to be in this way. It didn't work. He started himself, and then immediately, once it's running in that and people are mature enough, immediately then he establishes the GBC. Like that. And expects it to run that way. So therefore, the idea of just running it only based on one Acharya, it's not our line. Like that. Right, Narottam is the Acharya, means our line of Acharya, but he was under Srinivas Acharya, like that. And so we see that there was always this thing of others working under others, this idea that the guru can't work under anyone else. It's not an idea of our sampradaya, you know. That's where it comes from, we won't speculate, but in any case, it's not our sampradayic idea. Just because someone's senior, that's why they must be the manager. You know, we've seen many places administration fail because therefore whoever was the oldest or senior most in one way, they had to be the manager. No, who knows how to manage? Let them manage. So therefore, we don't have a problem with this. We can be senior while someone else is the manager. It doesn't matter. Management is on that level, then is who has the material skill like that and the spiritual potency. But on the society level, then it needs spiritual vision. So then the other thing is splitting the initiation, because those who come, others were looking for. They came from good backgrounds, they came looking. Then they would spend generally 1 to 3 years living personally with the guru, being trained by them. Then after, they would get what we call first and second initiation together, like that. Then, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could see that there was need of spreading it out. Besides the Purushcharya Vidhi, or the preliminary just service and chanting that you do before initiation, there needed to be even a split within that. So therefore, then the taking up of the identity as servant of Krishna was done in the first level, and then receiving the mantra and the right to worship the deity was put on the second level, because that then carries reaction, because then the seva aparads of the disciple will go to the guru, like that. Offenses to the name are difficult to do, like that. The name is very forgiving, but the deities, they have rules, you follow them, nice, you don't follow them, it's not so nice. So therefore, it's a much greater commitment to understanding the principles of Pancharatra, following the principles of Pancharatra, and agreement to follow the rules and regulations that are given by the Acharyas. So therefore, commitment is needed to be deeper. But you need to inspire the persons, connect them, because anyway, they may go off and connect themselves with any number of variety of bogus, sampradayas and all that. Therefore, some commitment needs to be achieved. So he split it. So then, before that time, him splitting the Pancharatrik, then you had what was called Namaguru, or one who got you to chant the holy name, like that. This would also be known as this Vartma Pradarshak Guru, one who gets you into the path, makes you aware of dynamic spiritual life, and that you take it up, you know, with some seriousness. You take up the practices of the Purushcharya to become initiated. Like that. Then you would have your Diksha Guru. But then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur split that. So therefore you have the Nama Guru, you have the first initiation, and then you have second initiation. So of that, then, because it's one process, the Pancharatrik process, then who gives first is the person who's going to be giving second. It's just two stages of the same thing. You know, it's like in a meal. You serve one course, then you serve the next. So it's natural, it's going to follow that line. But who has been the the Nama Guru, or who's the Vartma Padarshak, then that is not, there's no specific commitment there like that. They don't necessarily become the Diksha Guru. They're an expansion of the Siksha Guru. Those, the Nama Guru is an expansion of the Siksha Guru. So then the natural thing is that one then approaches, and then if that person's the advanced person, then fine. If not, then others will be associated with, one will get that faith, one will deepen that faith by hearing instructions that are given by the founder, Acharya, and then who has, you know, the closest or deepest relationship, that's the person who then takes on the duties of Diksha Guru. Like that. But, yeah, so we can see is that there's a difference. The Vartma Nama is not the Siksha. I mean, it's not the Diksha Guru by necessity. It appears with time amongst other followers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya that they, in this split, it's become hazy between the Nama Guru and the first initiation Guru. So therefore, the Nama and the first have kind of become blended. So there's no emphasis there. So the actual Guru then becomes who gives second, who actually gives the Gayatris, who gives Kama Gayatri, their Guru. But if they've simply given you a name or, you know, got you to chant, and a lot of times they give also the sixth line of the Gayatri, the Gopal Mantra, because that's how it was given to Lord Brahma. Before initiation, he got that mantra to help him in his chanting. So some give that. So sometimes there's a mistake thinking that they've given initiation, now you are the disciple of that person, where in their present tradition, how they're following it, there's no obligation. The Nama Guru, or who gives you that mantra, you have, you know, it's natural you have some appreciation, but you're not committed to that mat. You could go take second initiation from anybody, and then you'd be committed to that mat. So this is, so somehow or another it's become hazy between the time of the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and present day. But Srila Prabhupada is very explicit that anybody should be guru, right? So there's that verse by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that everybody should become guru. That means you go out and get everybody to take up chanting and train them in Krishna consciousness, like that. But of those who are then giving you the Pancharatrik initiation, who gives the first is the guru, and naturally they would become the second. So this split then is also unique, established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, with this particular emphasis like this, that it's just, it's the same process as old, just it gets split like that. So despite modern vagueness on this, this is the ancient tradition. So it hasn't been switched. It's just a matter of time between one and the next. It means anyway, they're going to go through it in that order. You're going to get the name, you're going to get the mantra, you're going to get... So if there's a 5-minute gap between name and mantra, or there's a couple of year gap, you know, it's the same principle, just time is greater. More time is given for maturity. Then the third principle is that before, people could understand the need of duty and of the rules and regulations to establish the mode of goodness. They were practicing it, they were established in it. So therefore, they could understand is that those then were practiced to the point where it became spontaneous. And then from that point, then the emphasis was slightly different. That spontaneous mood, not whimsical or sporadic, I mean, spontaneous here means you're performing the activities of devotional service because you like to do them. Not that if I don't like to do them, I don't do them. That's considered sinful. That was what Krishna told Arjuna, is that giving up your duty and not doing it, that's sin. Doing it but thinking you're the doer and you're the results are yours, that's a misunderstanding. That's materialistic. That's a materialistic devotee. Doing it because you know you're supposed to do them, that is proper. So that's the proper situation. Now within doing them, you may like to do them, that means advancement. If I'm following all the rules for the whole day, that's called Vaidhi Bhakti. When I'm doing all those rules for the whole day and I like doing them, I'm attracted to doing them, that's called spontaneous devotional service. Right? That is one aspect. It means we may have different definitions that one maybe more or less aware of the advanced stages of understanding your relationship with Krishna. That is a later stage of maturity. But the principle of that goes from the beginning to the end is that liking to do those services, or that desire to please Krishna through those services. So you like to do them, you want to please Krishna through them, then you actually understand your rasa with Krishna that you can do that in. So we see there be some detail there, but that constant thing of wanting to be involved in those things, not because the scriptures say, because you like it. It's your natural position. That's the broadest definition of spontaneous devotion, so that always applies. The others then apply according to the maturity of the disciple or the devotee. Therefore, we have to be careful when some give different definitions, saying this definition is not important, but this is the broad definition. So their specific definition still has to fall within this category. If it doesn't, then the point of the principle of spontaneous devotional service has been missed, and only the detail has been caught. So that is that itself means if it's taken to extreme, that brings them to the sahajya level. They don't even look at that vaidhi is even performed. They perform raganugasada without vaidhi, without that background, and their natural attraction is for themselves. So therefore, it starts to become a little strange, you know. But the principle, so that's why it has to be based on the principle, then naturally the detail is going to be different. Just like mathematics is the basic principle. Your first grade has certain, you don't teach them quantum mechanics. It just doesn't work. You don't walk into the classroom, you know, and then the first grader doesn't even know 1, 2, 3, 4, you know. You don't go up onto the board and try to teach them, you know, Einstein's unified theory. You know, it doesn't work like that. You teach them first grade. But it's all part of math. But if you're going to teach something else, okay, we're going to teach you mathematics without any numbers, without any arithmetic, you know, like that. We're just going to teach you quantum mechanics. It won't work like that. So it's based on the same principles. Therefore, it develops from there. So Prabhupada's definitions, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's definitions, these are the definitions of highly matured devotees who see the complete picture, see where we are at. They're not enamored by advanced devotion. They're not enamored by bhava or enamored by prema. They're on mahabhav. They don't need to be enamored. So therefore, they can look at us who we are. Right? It's a very simple thing. Let's say... Let's say you take up something, right? You take up whatever you want to take up, some kind of sport or activity. Now, someone who's expert in that field, let's say you're new to the field, they're going to start talking all the big language, all the technical things, what's the top of the line, you know, activities or paraphernalia for that different activity. So then it's naturally going to be bewildering to the new person. So the new person figures, oh, if I get this special kind of ski and I get this special kind of pole and I wear this special kind of clothes, then I'm an advanced skier. Because by listening to the experts, that's what it sounds like. Because they only talk in expert language. They're absorbed in their expertise. They are expert and they're absorbed in it. But we see someone who's a master at that sport. He comes down, he then preaches in a level in words that the newest person can understand so that they get the right proportion. Okay, I have to figure out how to get my feet in the boots, on the skis, and stay on top of the skis, not the skis on top of me. Right? And so therefore, it's not this ski, that ski, this technique. No, it's a matter of these are the fundamentals. And those fundamentals are still present at the master stage. So they, because they know what's master, they know what's the reality, and they know what's secondary. So we always have to be very, very careful of the presentation of the masters and the presentations of the experts. Like that. So we see that Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, they're masters. So they present things in a very pleasant way that everybody can understand. Someone who's advanced understands these basic principles on the highest level. Therefore, Prabhupada's books, He says, read them again and again and again. He says, there's no need to go anywhere. You read those by reading. If you can't understand the first time, keep reading it. And eventually you'll start to catch it. Not only that, then the more advanced you are, the more things you catch from it. Same purport will explain to the person who hasn't even taken up Krishna consciousness why he should take it up. To the person who's taken it up, how to practice it in that state. Someone who's advanced in that state, the Paramahamsa in that state. It's all there. But it's written so wonderfully. This is the master. Because the principle is there. Therefore, with a couple of details, then you can move. Like that. So it's a very unique thing. So this aspect, therefore, it appears by the presentation that there is no discussion of Raganuga Bhakti or any of these kinds of things, Sarupsati and that. But if you actually understand the problem, you'll look. Prabhupada's always talking about it. We purport, I think, on Friday. Prabhupada distinguished between what was Vaidhi and what was Rag Marg, and he didn't say Rag is bad. He just explained them both. It's a bona fide part of the system, but for someone who's on that platform. Right? That's the point. So therefore, some will say, and the way he's written it, it's so well designed that those within the society, many I think it's not there. Prabhupada only gave Vaidhi. And the amazing thing is those outside the society also think exactly the same thing. So therefore, they will try to present that they have the higher level when Prabhupada's already given the highest levels. Like that. Besides that, he's also mentioned, you need to understand some technical point on this level, this book will give it to you. Like that. So he's already presented what books of the acharyas are specific to what particular applications. So this is the point. This is the uniqueness then of the Saraswata line, because Prabhupada distinguishes as Saraswatas. Following Rupa Goswami, following Rupa were Saraswatas, because otherwise every Sahaja, they'll also claim they're also Rupanugas. But of Rupanugas were Saraswatas. So Saraswatas take this angle that the Vaidhi is the culture, that is the platform which everybody acts. Now, within that, depending upon your mentality, you may be at a higher platform. Right? Prabhupada also did the artik just the way we do the artik. He offered obeisances how you offered obeisances. He ate how we ate. He dressed how we dressed. He followed the whole Varnashram, the Pancharatric systems. Right? But we can understand that his understanding and level of realization was far, way beyond anything that we understand. But externally it looks the same. That is the explanation by the acharyas of Raganuga. That it looks the same as Vaidhi. In fact, it looks more like Vaidhi. Right? It looks more. The example is given of the housewife who has a paramour. She does her duties in the house better because she doesn't want anyone to suspect. So therefore, you'll find those who are more on that platform, they're more into the preaching, more into following the rules, more into doing all these things because no one should suspect. Like that. Not this opposite that they give it up and they don't care and all that. That's a total misunderstanding of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy given by Rupa Goswami. So we have to be very careful is that this is the uniqueness that Prabhupada has given and emphasized, you know, these aspects as the founder acharya, then these aspects then set us aside as Saraswatas, and even within the followers of Saraswati Thakur, that we're sticking to the original that Srila Prabhupada, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established. Any questions or comments on this? That's just a contemporary practice somehow or another of the other branches of the Gaudiya Mat. How, I don't know. Not sure. I think basically what's come is that, especially in Bengal, you have so many other sampradayas, Balak Brahmachari and Odalomi and, you know, Thakur and all these people like that. They go into a village, call a big program. Villagers are, something's happening in the village. They all go. Then after the program, then they just say, who wants to be initiated? And then everybody there will say that. There's no rules, there's no regulations, nothing. Then they're all connected to that person. And then their allegiance will be there. You go there and preach. They already have their guru. They like hearing. The sadhu, they'll always hear. But their allegiance is that. So therefore, in the Gaudiya Math, they started. It's basically kind of like what we is pre-initiation. That's what the purpose is. Is that people, whoever's their guru, then that's the line they'll go in. So if people catch them earlier, then they won't align with the Gaudiyas. They'll align with other lines.